It was a very busy news day around West Texas here in Lubbock, and joining me in studio to talk a little bit about his part of the news cycle, State Representative Charles Perry. Representative Perry, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here, Chad. Appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, probably every answer that needed to be answered was yesterday. But if there's a few of those still hanging around out there, let us know.
Well, hey, there's, you know there's a lot to get into.
Yeah, there really is.
And because this is this has been a process that I think you mentioned in one of the news stories yesterday. This has been a process, honestly, that has been talked about, discussed for over a year now.
Correct. Yeah, and, about a year. And Senator Duncan and I talked about it, and multiple venues have talked about it. So, you know, it just came to head yesterday, and now we're moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been the worst kept secret or not, but it's up there. Tell us a little bit, of course, Senator Duncan will be the next chancellor over at Texas Tech, and you've had a lot of praise for that move, and a lot of folks have had praise for that move. What do you think it means to have someone like Robert Duncan in as chancellor?
Well, I'll take it on multiple levels. One, I don't know that you'll find a better guy from a state government perspective. He knows the workings. He knows the budget. He knows the personalities. He knows how to push and when to back up a little bit and move things forward and keep the agenda moving. So from that perspective, there is not a better candidate. From a guy that's passionate about tech, you know, president of his class and school and law and the whole deal with tech. I mean, there's just not going to be a better guy that's committed to tech for the right reasons. And then you've just got Bob's personality. Mm-hmm. And I tell people he's a workhorse. He's humble. Mm-hmm. He never seeks credit. He just goes to work every day, and the results are what they are. And I was talking to somebody else today on a radio deal, and I said, you know, what we're going to know is, or what you may never know, is the reason tech's reached its status is because a lot of things that Bob Duncan did behind the scenes. And I kind of liken it to, you know, he was kind of the caretaker of the soil, so to speak, and the fruits are now out there. And you'll never know, you know, all the things that he did from that perspective. So couldn't have been a better choice. Trustees did an awesome job. And there's just not a better guy to take it from where it's at today to move it to the next level with that balance. You know, tech needs that personality that the comparisons would come inevitably with Hance. And there's never going to be another Hance. I think Hance is phenomenal at so many levels for tech. And he bleeds red and black, so you can't ever discount his passion for tech. But to take that to the next guy, you've got to have a special kind of person. And Bob fits that bill up and down the line. There's not a thing he's lacking in that area.
Well, and this was a very important pick, I think, for Texas Tech. You know, moving into a very critical area still, you know, with funding, everything else mm-hmm. that Texas Tech is trying to do and trying to build, you know, that Ken Hance really started, you know, to push. And Senator Duncan and all of you really working behind the scenes, in front of the scenes at times, really trying to help out Texas Tech and the funding issue. This is still a critical time for tech.
It is critical. And the nice thing about it is Bob has instant credibility in this region. You know, he's won his seat for excess of 20 years. He's been able to garner pretty much no opposition because everybody recognizes him for what he is, a hard worker, smart individual that comes to play. And he comes down there ready to go and work, and Tech's never been short-sighted in that effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your opinion, because you're going to be now going into another campaign mode going forward, as far
Lucky
as Texas,
me.
Yeah, exactly. As far as Texas Tech goes, what are some of the big priorities for Tech in your mind and looking at it from a legislative type of issue? What are some of those priorities that Texas Tech may have, or some of those issues that will be directly impacting tech going forward?
I think that because of tech, I mean, Bob and Hance and those individuals before even Montfort, it goes back to Montfort, in my opinion, where some of the capital campaign stuff started, building that research base. And I know research can be overdone maybe, but tech's done at research in the things that matter to this area. Mm-hmm. You know, the bear crop science, the seed technologies, those are all things that are important to rural agriculture, our area. So, you know, we're beneficiaries of a lot of what's just come out of tech. So all that to say is I think the next thing for tech to do, we have earned our seat at the table. Mm-hmm. You know, tech probably wasn't there 10 years ago from a state perspective. It was always A&M and UT.
Right.
A&M and UT. Well, I think now you consider AUM and UT and tech together. Anytime you're talking statewide universities, and there's a lot of great other state universities, but tech's reached that level where they're a consideration every time there's a decision made for higher ed. And that's because we've earned that, you know, 40,000 students, that gets attention. UT's 40,000, you know, kind of deal. So we begin to reach those benchmarks to where you get to the next tier, and it's directly a result of those guys' efforts. But because we've reached that, we're always in the hunt for research dollars. We're always in the hunt for the academician, you know, that's thinking, I need to go somewhere where I can raise a good family, have a great quality of life, and a cost of living that's manageable, and why not Texas Tech now? So right. We're getting those looks from world-renowned university people to come and teach the minds of the day. So, and there's a work ethic that I'll attribute to Ken Hantz. If you heard his commencement addresses, and anytime you've heard him speak, he'll always emphasize, we work out here. Our kids graduate ready to work. They come from backgrounds of working families. And that's an attribute that's not found in a lot of these other higher education. You know, a lot of it's a ivory tower kind of setting where these kids are silver spooned into the system and out. And I think Tech grads walk out with employers having great confidence that they came from a background family geographically, and also from just Texas Tech's philosophy that Ken Hantz has instilled day in and day out. It don't matter what you know. If you don't know how to implement it or don't want to, you're worthless to your employer. So yeah. I've seen that throughout, and that's something I think Bob will pick up and run with, because he's not short on hard work.
You and Senator Duncan, y'all have a good working relationship. You mentioned earlier about how, you know, y'all have had conversations about this entire process. Moving forward, that's got to benefit you a little bit, you know, knowing that and working with him and he working with you going forward and into this race for his seat. That's got to be a nice advantage, don't you think?
I've been asked that, and I don't expect Bob to be out there front running, lead my charge, but I do think that if people approach him and say, is Perry the guy, or can Perry do the job, or is Perry sharp, can Perry go down there and be effective on the Senate side, I think I'll have a favorable response. I think you know, Bob and I have had a conversation one time. He said, the thing I like about you is you're an independent thinker. The thing that makes it tough is you're an independent thinker. So, coming from him, that's a good analogy, though, because I think you can characterize he's not always on, you know, what you'd perceive to be the political side of issues. And I think that's what's made him a good states guy, and I think that's what's helped this area. We don't need people that are pigeonholed. We need people that can think, because we need different things out here, and very few people know our story. And you never lose sight of where you're at and what you need and where your region's at, because it's different than Houston. And I think Bob did a masterful job of maneuvering through all of those other issues that those urban cities needed, keeping Lubbock and this region in front of those guys to where they recognize that's valid concern. We need to help you there.
Well, it has become a struggle. Yeah. It has become West Texas versus, it seems like, everybody else in the state, especially east of 35. It's become that battle between the two.
And that kind of raises a point that the most important thing we can do is preserve as much seniority as we can possibly. Obviously, I'll be a freshman senator if things work out. A special election would provide a way to be sworn in ahead of potentially 9 other freshman senators.
Right.
And where that plays in is with a new lieutenant governor that seems to have favor with me in philosophy and politically. You know, that would be critical, I think, for this region to have that influence early and not have to be behind the line of everybody else through a ping pong ball draw in the House, you know.
Sure.
So I hope that there's some wisdom out there at the governor's level that sees the need for that. I think Bob would be supportive of trying to make that transition pretty quick, and we hit the ground running with a new lieutenant governor, with one that, you know, has his polarizing characteristics. But I fall in line a lot of the things that Dan Patrick stands for, and I think that's going to be the obvious winner. It would be great for this region to be able to have that running start before session comes.
Can you hang out for one segment? All right.
Yes, sir.
We'll go ahead and we'll take the break. When we come back, more conversations with State Representative Charles Perry, running for State Senate whenever that seat officially vacates. We'll be right back. In studio, State Representative Charles Perry, who will be seeking the open Senate seat once that becomes open. That Robert Duncan moving over to the Chancellor's office over at Texas Tech University, and that has just received all sorts of praise from everyone around. And let's talk a little bit about that Senate seat and about where you're coming from, because this has been something, again, that's been discussed for a long time now. You're pretty familiar with that area, correct?
Correct.
I mean, your district, District 83, covers a large area of Senate seat 28.
Between the two redistrictings, you know, the current district and the district prior, I had the western side of Senate District 28. We flipped. I got a lot of the southern part of 28. So geography-wise, covered a massive amount. I think the numbers that were quoted on a population base, it might have been close to 70%. Either way, it seems to be I'm pretty recognizable. The far south, I mean, this thing goes into Mason.
Right.
It is a big district. It's 50 counties and, it goes all over the state. But from that perspective, the population centers, Senate District 28 and District 83 almost overlap on the big cities.
Let me ask you this then. The work that you've done as state representative, the legislative work that you've done, how much does that translate over to with experience to that Senate district as far as different things that you've worked on, different pieces of legislation that you've worked on?
Well, and the good thing about it is the economic interest is universal. We have oil and gas, we have ag, we have retail, we have hospital, we have college. Mm-hmm. Sangelo has a Texas Tech satellite deal. You got Tech here in Lubbock. You've got the hospital medical districts in both Peace of Abilene, Sangelo, and Lubbock, all part of a system. You've got the economic oil and gas industry throughout the entire southern and it's growing north. And you got Ag North and you got Ag South. So it's been an easy process, if you will, to where almost universally in any town hall meeting, I've got the same type of interest, and that's made it nice from that perspective. The further south you go, I guess it'll be hunting. I'm looking forward to getting down and meeting some of those guys in Mason area and some of that place where they have a little bit different mix of economic interest, where it's more ranching, cattle ranching and things.
Right.
So we'll see.
But you've worked on a lot of these issues.
Yes,
already.
Water. Water's universal,
right,
across that district, that 50-county district. Hands down, everybody's got a concern for water. Put education right up there with it. You know, I've got the richest of the richest district, and I've got the poorest of the poorest district. So I've had that diversity. And that provides a good balance when you're doing legislation. You mm-hmm. always look at those two and the interplay between those two. So my district's had that in 83. I've had Sundown, which is in the top tier, and I've had Snyder in the top tier, and then I've had Cotterety City, which is probably one of the poorest districts in the state. So it's a real diverse, but it makes you a better legislature. I'm familiar now pretty much with any issues that they're going to face. Transportation seems to be coming up across the southern half, Snyder weekly, some transportation need coming in because they're growing.
Yeah.
They're getting ready in anticipation of the Klein Shale and a lot of those needs. So it's been pretty good training ground, if you will, for Senate District 28.
Where's education legislation going in the next legislative session?
Well, everybody's waiting for the court case. I hope, this is my goal, and I think they'll see the wisdom in it. We changed the equity formula funding back in 2011 when we had the budget deficit. It moved 700 of those districts out of the hold harmless. It began that process of equity distributing funding. I hope, and that expires in 2017, that formula tweak. I hope the court set back on the equity issue and give that formula a chance to play out, because since the history of 2006, when this current formula was put in place, we'll be closer to equity than we ever will be when we come back in 2017. So they ought to let that play out and purposely tweak that rather than trying to throw the whole thing out.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked at it 50 different ways, and it always comes back down to we have such a diversity in tax base. And until you had a statewide property tax, which is not constitutional, until you have another means of equitable distribution of those pennies, that's not going to happen, because then you get to a constitutional prohibition against property taxes. So it's really complicated. So the system we've got isn't perfect. We've made some adjustments that are making it more transparent and more equitable. Let's see what we can do to kind of fix where we're at. But we're waiting to see what the guidance, if any, from the Supreme Court will get. And then you've got the adequacy issue. And I don't believe the Texas Supreme Court wants to be in the budget process. That's not their roles. And I think that we've done a good job in this state of keeping judiciary, legislative, and executive branches very, very much isolated from each other. And that's why we have a good state.
You brought up that you're going to have, what is it, nine new
six to nine
six
is
to
the
nine
number
new
I'm
senators.
Told, depending on elections.
this Senate is going to, in the past, it's been a Republican Senate, but it's been a, I think most people would say, a moderate, moderate Senate. This Senate could go conservative, very conservative, which would be a very interesting change. You've seen it in the House. Now you could see it in the Senate. What does that mean as far as type of legislation that you've seen in the House? I'm sure you've been frustrated at times seeing some pieces of legislation go to the Senate and die. What does that mean going forward?
I think you're going to see for the first time and finally in a lot of the House initiatives that have not gotten heard, zero-based budgeting, one that I've offered and championed, that will come into play and I think be passed through the Senate with no issues. And I think there's growing support for it in the House. So zero-based budgeting, I think, will be a real process. The population plus inflation cap on state growth, it just makes sense to have an objective standard to mirror your state budget by. Now, you can choose to, as a legislature, to not implement or override that if you felt there's a need or there's some extenuating circumstances, but you ought to have some baseline as to how you're going to budget excess revenues. And if you have an excess, do you give that back or do you put that through infrastructure? Do you build, a sinking fund for deferred maintenance? I'll tell you one thing that never gets talked about. Hands down, $100 million of deferred maintenance on capital assets, state assets that we just ignore. And that's just kicking the can down the road. We shouldn't be doing that. So there's other ways to be good stewards of those dollars. And if you have that population plus inflation cap out there, that kind of sets your ceiling. And from there, you work down on the needs instead of just kind of an open end. And Katie bar the door, you got whatever you got, and you spend everything in it usually. So that'll happen. I really think you'll see a huge push from that. I think Governor Abbott supports it. Your House makeup is still going conservative. Out of the seats that are being changed over, you got more conservatives. And then in the Senate, no doubt, those are fiscal initiatives. So you're going to see a lot of fiscal conservative legislation.
Which I think is something that a lot of people out there are going to be very happy to see.
And we need to do. Yeah. It brings common sense approach to what we do and how we govern. And when the times are tough, as we had in 11, it makes them less painful to pull back. And when the times are good, we're putting away and putting hay in the barn so that when those times come that they're stabilized.
What type of person out there, what type of candidate would you like to see replace you?
Someone that has the best interest of the district at heart and then the best interest of the state, that's not moved by the political winds of the day. Mm-hmm. But number one, a godly Christian guy. I mean, really, you got to have a foundation, and I know that sounds cliche, but I really act from that foundation. If it doesn't measure up there, then I'm not going to be interested in it further down. So if you start there, in there, you usually get it right. You can differ how we get there sometimes. May not make it perfect, but if I know I'm in line there, I don't have to worry. So I hope it's somebody that fits that bill.
You going to be involved at all, or are you going to be a little? Are you going to be hands off?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I hope we get a good state of good candidates, and the voters have a good pick to pick from.
All right, State Representative Charles Perry, appreciate your time today.
Thank you, guys.